Hello, and welcome to another installment of the Weird Chronicles. Each episode, we bring you tales of action and adventure from Malifaux and the other side. The wild places of Malifaux are always dangerous, and the Notwoods are no exception. Packs of wild animals make their homes among the twisted trees, and they do not hesitate to attack intruders. But sometimes, even more dangerous forces lurk in the shadows, ready to hunt and kill. I hope you enjoy the long walk home.
The Long Walk Home by Anthony Hicks. They lowered the body into the shallow pit with little ceremony. Wet dirt spattered across the rough-spun sack as they filled the hole. It was a somber task, made more so by the persistent drizzle and fading light. When it was done, they drove a simple stake of knotwood crossed with a crude nameplate into the soft earth above the grave. Kai Lachman looked around at the meagre group surrounding the shallow plot.
"Does anyone have anything to say?"
he asked. Most of the onlookers shuffled uncomfortably or gazed sullenly at their feet. Diallo, the dismal rain gleaming on his ebony skin, stepped forwards.
"He fought well, and his death was swift,"
he said.
"That is all any of us can ask for."
Kai nodded to his second in command, and the tall man stepped back into his place. Across from him, Moody raised his head. A sly grin lurked at the corners of his mouth, and the rain plastered his long, ratty hair to his narrow face.
"Ezra's death brings me great sorrow," he said, still smirking, "and a larger share in the loot."
Diallo glared at the smaller man, the heat of his anger practically boiling the rain between the two of them. But he said nothing. From the corner of his eye, Lachman saw young Weber stiffen at the callousness of Moody's comments. But he too remained silent. Moody's smirk grew fractionally at the apparent lack of response to his eulogy and nudged Espinosa, the woman standing next to him. Espinosa gave him a blank stare, then looked at the grave before simply shrugging her blade-like shoulders and returning her gaze to her boots. Still don't know what did him in. Lachman gave his companions one last look over and cleared his throat.
"We'll make camp down the hill. Be ready to move on at first light."
He watched as the sorry group broke apart and trudged down the hill. Reaching inside his heavy jacket, he pulled out a battered and dog-eared leather booklet. Wedged within its pages was a pencil. Lachman opened the book to the marked page. It was a list of names. All but six of them had been crossed out at some point in the past. Slowly and deliberately, he took the pencil and drew a thick line through the name Ezra Conroy. He placed the pencil back inside the book, closed it up, and stuffed it back inside his pocket. A long, heartfelt sigh escaped him. Too many fallen friends. He rubbed one hand across his craggy features, wiping away the drizzle that had settled on him, and turned to follow his companions down the hill. The camp was quiet. No fire had been set. Weber thought it would be a challenge to find any dry wood anyway. Commander Lachman bent over to his kit bag and began to assemble his tent. He looked tired to Weber, worn out like a dead tree, grey and skeletal. The campaign had taken its toll on all of them, but to Weber's eyes it had taken the most from Kai Lachman. The grizzled commander put on a brave face. He still stood straight-backed and broad-shouldered, but the winds of age and rains of loss had sapped his vigour. He walked at the back of the group now, instead of striding at the front, and drew his pistol first rather than his sword. Weber wanted to talk to the others about his concerns, but knew better. Diallo would loudly and blindly deny all that he said. Moody would say nothing but get that avaricious glint in his eye, like he did when they had found Ezra's shredded remains. And Espinosa, well, she was just too damn scary to even think about opening up to.
Diallo had wandered over to speak with Lachman. Webber could not hear what they were saying, but given the hostile stares the big man kept hurling at Moody, he could guess. Jabez Moody was an excellent sniper, but he was also an utterly repellent human being, driven by his lust for wealth and all the vices it could bring. During his introduction to the company, Lachman had told him, "If you shake Moody's hand, you'd best count your fingers after." Evidently not mollified by Lachman, Diallo stalked off, still glaring over his shoulder at the smirking sniper. Webber got to his feet and crossed the camp to Lachman.
"If you're going to tell me to do something about Moody, you're too late," said Lachman. "Diallo has already chewed my ear about discipline and dissension, so save your breath."
"Actually, boss, I was going to ask if you wanted a hand with your tent."
Lachman sagged.
"I'm sorry, kid. It's been a long day."
"Seems like they're all long days recently. But we've not much farther to go, eh?"
Lachman relinquished his tent construction to Webber, and the youth set about the task with admirable gusto.
"To be honest, kid, I don't know,"
said Lachman.
"This damn forest has me all turned around. I'd swear the paths are moving when I'm not looking. By my reckoning, we should be on the road to Malifaux by now. But here we are, still stuck in the damn woods."
Webber looked worried.
"Are we lost, boss?"
"If Ezra were still with us, I'd say no. Best scout I ever knew. But now I'm not so sure. Losing anyone is a tragedy. But you couldn't have chosen a better person to put in the ground if you wanted us fouled up."
The camp had ceased their chores and were all staring at the commander. Webber felt his stomach squirm. The thought of being lost in the Notwoods was not one he really wanted to entertain. Lachman met each of their gazes with his own.
"I'm not saying we won't make it home, but it's going to be a rough trip. We'd do well to leave that behind."
He jerked his thumb in the direction of the heavy oak chest in the center of the camp.
"Take only what we need."
Moody slithered to his feet, that irritating grin crawling across his face.
"After this trip, boss," he said, "I reckon I need what's in that chest. So we'll be taking it with us when we leave, if it's all the same to you."
Webber looked at the stained wood, trying to picture the contents and the price it would fetch back in Malifaux.
"Without the chest,"
he said,
"there's not a lot of point in even going back to Malifaux."
Lachman grumbled, but said nothing. None of them noticed the shadows creeping out from the edge of the chest. Lachman stretched his neck again, trying to ease some of the stiffness that had settled there. The night's rest had proved a poor one, and his battered body felt every cut and bruise of his martial life. Ahead of him, Diallo plodded on, the heavy chest of looted treasures strapped to his broad back. The sour atmosphere between him and Moody had not improved, and Lachman worried it might soon spill over into violence. He had separated them, placing Espinosa between them in the order of march, and that had been enough for now. They walked like that for hours. The sun rose ahead of them, its weak light pushing through the forest canopy. Shadows crisscrossed their path as they pushed onwards. Lachman saw a pair of brightly colored songbirds chase one another through the dappled light, disappearing from view behind the trunks of a mighty tree. As he watched, one of the birds became snared on a patch of sticky bark. A fleshy lump of fungus bloomed around it, enveloping the creature while its mate squawked wretchedly. A shiver tickled his spine as the knotwood reminded him of its true nature. Noon brought a respite from the relentless marching. The sorry company set up a makeshift camp and rested. Webber broke out a portion of trail rations, carefully doling out portions of dried fruit, nuts, and jerked meat to his companions. Lachman watched him count a handful of berries into Espinosa's outstretched hand. She regarded him with the same blank expression she gave everything. He realized that despite serving with her for more than 2 years, he knew precious little about the woman. Her patchwork armor and paired swords were of Three Kingdoms design, but she was clearly not from there. She and Webber could not have been more different. Where she was quiet and withdrawn with hollow eyes and an empty expression, He was bright and talkative. Blackman worried the campaign might have sapped his remaining optimism, but was pleased to see that was not the case.
What are you going to do with your share, boss?
Asked Weber as he plopped down on the damp earth. Blackman smiled slowly before answering.
Rest, I think. Rest and re-equip. This company will need some fresh blood if it's to continue, and folks don't work for free.
Weber nodded, considering what Blackman had said.
What about you, Diallo? Where's your share going? I will bring my family through the breach. It has been too long since I saw my wife and son. I didn't know you had a family, Diallo,
said Weber.
You never speak of them. Some things are best kept private around open ears and empty heads,
replied Diallo, looking pointedly at Moody.
Whiskey, said the sniper as if on cue. Lots of whiskey. And then I might buy me some quality time with Long Sally down at the Briar Rose. Maybe a couple of our friends, too.
Blackman chuckled at Moody's words.
Your turn, Esmond. What will the young Mr. Weber be spending his hard-earned coin on?
Weber remained silent for a long moment. Blackman could see he was struggling with his answer.
I think I'm going to muster out,
he said finally. Buy myself a house, find a wife, and settle down. Soldiering's been good to me, but I don't think I'm cut out for it. Blackman smiled again, softer now.
I think that's very wise, Mr. Weber. What about you, Espinosa? Any thoughts of becoming an honest woman?
She was silent for a moment. Whatever got Ezra is still out there. We may not make it back. Weber shouldered his way through the wet foliage. Fronds of sticky plant matter clung to him like vegetable cobwebs. They had set off marching again, shortly after Espinosa's chilling words. Blackman had moved her to the rear of the column so he could keep an eye on her, and Weber was secretly elated. Having Diallo and Moody between her and him went some way towards alleviating the chill that settled on him since the rest break. Of course, that meant the sniper and Diallo were verbally sparring again. The sun was swiftly falling behind them. The terrain had become far more rugged, and the constant bickering between his two companions was not improving matters any. A steep gorge yawned ahead of them. A vertiginous slope, studded with rain-slick rocks and patches of slippery moss, fell away beneath Weber's feet. He cried out and halted suddenly, grasping onto a nearby tree limb to keep from plummeting into the gorge. Behind him, Moody cursed his name as he blundered forwards. The column came to a stop, and Blackman edged up to the lip of the slope.
We can climb down, I think, he announced. It'll be rough going, but it'll be quicker than trying to find a way around.
Weber and Diallo began to unpack coils of rope from the kit bags, while Blackman started to plot out a decent route. The sun was almost below the tree line by the time they were finished, casting long shadows ahead of them. Espinosa eyed Diallo curiously through the whole endeavor, like a cat trying to decide if the insect beneath its claws was to be eaten or released for further amusement. Suddenly, Moody pitched forwards as if shoved hard from behind. He fell heavily, crunching his jaw into a nearby rock. He climbed awkwardly to his feet, blood dripping from his gashed chin, and rounded on Diallo furiously.
What the hell?
He demanded. The big man looked at him nonplussed.
Are you speaking to me?
You're damn right I'm talking to you. You just pushed me over for no damn reason.
I did no such thing. You fell.
Moody reached for the long-bladed knife at his hip.
I fell,
he said incredulously.
Indeed, perhaps you lost your footing.
Diallo turned away from the argument. Espinosa stood very close behind him, causing the big man to step back involuntarily. She stared at him, her head gently cocked to one side.
Don't you turn away from me,
spat Moody.
Calm down, both of you,
yelled Blackman. He stepped between Moody and Diallo, placing a restraining hand on the sniper's chest. Diallo still stood looking at Espinosa. She had barely moved, only her eyes flickering up and down the big man.
Step away from me, woman,
said Diallo. Look at me, you giant bastard.
Moody was still shouting. We're not done yet.
Lachman placed his other hand on Moody.
You need to take a breath, son,
he said. From his spot at the head of the column, Weber saw only glimpses of what happened next. Espinosa's blade slashed up from its scabbard, carving a shining silver arc through the air and into Diallo's chest. A welter of blood, bright and wet, erupted from the perfect red line the sword left behind. The big man tottered backwards, collapsing into Lachman.
What the?
Lachman began as both Lachman and Diallo went down in a tangle of limbs and bursting crimson. Wordlessly, Espinosa spun the dripping blade in her hand and reversed the stroke. It bit into Diallo's outstretched leg, shearing through muscle and bone effortlessly. The man's scream seemed to jolt Weber and Moody into action. The sniper reached for his long rifle, fumbling with the straps of its harness. Weber cried out and rushed at Espinosa, his own sword ripping free of his hip. Espinosa's second blade appeared in her other hand. It rang as it intercepted Weber's downward cut. For the briefest moment, Weber saw confusion in Espinosa's hollow eyes.
I saved him, you damn fools! She yelled. It almost got him!
Weber screamed out and hacked at her again and again. His rising fury clouded out any hope of swordsmanship. Espinosa ducked and parried with easy grace, never once attempting to strike back. Behind him, Weber heard Lachman calling out for aid, his voice tinged with mounting panic.
Get down! Yelled Moody.
Weber heard the ominous click of the sniper's rifle cocking and hurled himself to the ground. The shot roared out. Incredibly, Espinosa swayed aside and the bullet meant for her head tore a chunk from a sapling at the base of the slope. Moody swore and swiftly began to reload. Espinosa spun on her heel and sprinted for the tree line. Swift as a deer, she vanished amongst leaves. Moody fired a second shot, tearing up clumps of vegetation, but she was gone. Weber and Moody stared after her, their mouths agape. It took them several frantic minutes to staunch the flow of blood pouring from Diallo. Clothes were torn into impromptu bandages, and what little water they could spare was used to wash his wounds clean. It looked bad for him. The cut on his chest was deep, down to the bone deep, and despite the constant pressure and improvised first aid, the bleeding just would not stop. It had slowed considerably, but never ceased. The wound on his leg was even worse. Espinosa's attack had all but severed the limb at the knee. They tied off his leg with a tourniquet to stop the arterial jet and did what they could to stitch the awful wound closed. But it would take more than their paltry skills to save the leg. Lachman stood over his oldest companion and friend. Diallo was grey and bathed in sweat, his face twisted in agony. Only the man's legendary resolve kept him from sobbing like a child. As it was, he whimpered now and again, but for the most part remained silent. Behind him, Weber, looking almost as bad as Diallo, rubbed his sticky, red hands on a tuft of grass. There were tears in his eyes as he scratched at Diallo's blood, desperate to be rid of it. Moody nodded at his commanding officer, beckoning him over. Lachman glanced once more at Diallo before trudging over to the sniper.
I know you won't want to hear this, boss, but we have to leave him.
No,
replied Lachman instantly.
Be reasonable, boss. He can't walk, not in his state, and I can't bloody well carry him. If this is about getting a bigger share of the loot, Moody, I'd sooner leave it than him.
Moody looked wounded.
Really, Lachman? That's what you think this is about? Look at him. He'll be dead soon enough. Why prolong the situation?
He's one of us. And while he still breathes, he comes with us.
About that, boss.
Lachman grabbed Moody by the front of his coat, murder burning in his eyes.
You're not thinking clearly, Moody,
he hissed.
That thing you think you're about to suggest to me, it's really not a good idea. I'll save you the ignominy of me kicking your ass by letting you take Weber here and going to find us some fresh water. maybe rethink your position. What do you say? That sound like a good idea round about now?
He shoved Moody backwards. The sniper staggered a few steps before righting himself. He glared at Lachman. Lachman stared back, his face stone. Moody smoothed out the front of his long coat.
Come on, Weber, he said. Let's go take a look around. We might be here a while.
Lachman watched them stalk away. Slowly he eased his hand off the grip of his pistol and returned to Diallo. A labyrinth of shadow, crazed and erratic, surrounded the two men as they walked tentatively through the forest. Dusk had fallen, and the trees' dark twins stretched out their black hands to envelop them. The darkness made for poor progress, and every few moments one of the walkers would stumble as an unseen root or shrub entangled his legs.
You understand I'm right, don't you, Weber?
Said Moody in an urgent whisper.
We should grab what we can from the loot and strike out on our own. Diallo's lost. Lachman won't hear it, but it's the truth. You saw his wounds. He'll be dead within the day. Why should we wait for him to bleed out in this place when we can be on our way?
Weber remained silent.
Fine. But ask yourself this. Why is it we are out here on this fool's errand surrounded by this hellish forest, eh? Why not our valiant commander?
He and Diallo are conspiring against us, you mark me.
When we return, Lachman will pronounce some new, harebrained scheme, and we shall have no say in the matter. We must stand together against him, you and I, Weber. What do you say?
Weber clumsily scaled a fallen log, pausing to steady himself against the body of a tree as he crossed. But still he said nothing.
Not to mention that witch Espinosa. I always had my doubts about her, you know, too quiet and too skilled. She was always going to snap and just start killing. She's probably still out there watching us, stalking us. If we don't stand united, she'll pick us off one by one.
You think Diallo will be worth a damn if she comes slinking back into the camp to slit our throats?
Or Lachman, for that matter. I know you've seen him. Seen how this campaign has changed him. He'll be no match for that crazy brouhaha.
But you and me, Weber, we'd be a challenge she'd as soon as not take up.
We can survive this. But I need you with me.
Weber plodded on stoically, still refusing to speak.
Damn it, Weber, are you even listening to me?
Said Moody, his voice rising. Esmond Weber turned slowly, his anger a palpable thing. He parted his lips, a tirade of bile and hatred poised to spill forth. And then he saw it. A grotesque blob of living shadow. It spilled out from the ground around Moody's feet, extending spider-like limbs of inky blackness. It seized the sniper in a terrible embrace and plucked him from the ground. Held there for the briefest moment, Weber saw Moody's eyes bulge with silent, uncomprehending terror before it vanished back into the young man's shadow, taking Moody with it, the shadow dispersing into the darkened forest. Lachman heard the screams, distant at first, but drawing closer with every heartbeat. It was Weber's voice. Of that there could be no doubt. He sprang to his feet, drawing his pistol with practiced ease. Seconds later, Weber burst from the trees. His face was deathly pale, and tears of utter terror streamed down his face. He sprinted directly for Lachman, sobbing with fear.
"It's behind me!"
blurted out Weber.
"It's right behind me!
What is? Where's Moody? What?"
A spindle-limbed pool of gloom stretched up from Weber's shadow. Lachman stared, open-mouthed as the horror reached for him with its dark tendrils.
"Down!"
yelled a woman's voice from behind him. With instincts born on a dozen battlefields, Lachman threw himself down. A silver arc of gleaming death blurred over his head, embedding in the shadow creature's arachnid body. It hissed in pain and leapt away, disappearing into the shadow of a nearby tree. Espinosa flew from her concealed position and sprinted for the shadow where the thing had taken refuge. Weber fell into Lachman, his face wet with fear.
"What the hell is that thing?"
he sobbed. Espinosa stood on the edge of the tree shadow, her back to the others.
Neverborn, she said venomously. Of some sort. Been stalking us since we took that damn chest. Must have hidden in its shadow.
Bandersnatch,
whispered Lachman. Espinosa turned to him. You know what this is? Lachman shook his head.
Not really. I've just heard tales, stories. And an old comrade who used to swear he once saw a shadow eat a man. That's the name he had for it.
You knew it was tailing us.
It's been following us for at least a week, hiding in the shadows, Espinosa replied. At first I thought I was seeing things. But when we found Ezra, I knew it couldn't be some random Nephilim attack. I saw it try to take Diallo, but my blade went right through it and... Both Webber and Lachman stared at their returned companion, disbelieving.
Take Diallo, she said, and go now. I will cover your exit. Go now!
Don't be so bloody stupid, woman, said Lachman. We will get out of here together, shoulder to shoulder like we always have.
No, she replied, staring down at her own shadow. I don't think running will do me any more good.
Her shadow twitched slightly, even as she stood still. Take the others and go, now. The Bandersnatch erupted from its hiding spot, its voice a screech and its limbs deadly blades seeking exposed flesh. Espinosa reacted a fraction too late. Her sword swept down in a devastating stroke, but the Bandersnatch was no longer where she struck. In return, it slashed at her with its pitch-black limbs, tearing at her flesh like a whip. It rushed past her as it struck, disappearing into another shadow. She turned again, but the creature was already moving, plucking at her with those awful appendages, ravaging skin and exposing muscle.
Run!
She screamed. Despite himself, Webber ran. He could hear the sounds of struggle behind him, the gasps of pain and the hissing slash of Espinosa's sword. He glanced over his shoulder as he ran. Lachman was struggling with Diallo's prone body, trying in vain to hoist the man to his remaining good leg. Across from him, Espinosa hacked and cut at the Bandersnatch. But it was all in vain. The monster moved too quickly for her to track, leaping from one shadow to another, ripping slivers of meat from her each time it passed, and ducking into safety as her sword hurtled after it. Webber turned back, sprinting over to assist Lachman. He threw the injured man's arms over his shoulders and hauled him up. Diallo hissed in pain, fresh blood blooming across his primitive dressings.
Come on, urged Webber. We have to get out of here.
Together, Lachman and Webber half-dragged, half-carried Diallo from the clearing. The sounds of Espinosa's battle rang in their ears as they fled. The thought of leaving her behind like this burned Webber as much the effort of keeping Diallo on his feet. They lurched from tree to tree, tripping and stumbling with every step. Webber was frantic with fear, seeing the Bandersnatch everywhere. Each exposed root or low branch became a reaching claw or groping tentacle. Time and again, his heart froze as the forest's inanimate wardens scraped his flesh or tangled his hair. Finally, the panicked flight proved too much, and he fell. Diallo gasped with pain as one half of his support vanished from under him. Lachman hauled on the bigger man's arm, grunting with effort. Somehow he managed to keep him upright. Webber thrashed and wailed on the floor, convinced the Bandersnatch had ensnared him. After several terror-fueled seconds of struggle, he realized it was in fact a particularly thick bramble entwined about his legs.
Get up, you damn fool, said Lachman, wheezing. I need your help.
Webber kicked the last of the bramble from his legs and struggled to his feet. He slipped his shoulder beneath Diallo's arm once more and took the weight. Immediately, he could tell something was wrong. Diallo was leaden in his grip. His breath came in barely audible rasps, faint and shallow.
Set him down, instructed Lachman. He needs to rest.
Together, they laid Diallo on the earth. His face was ashen, and fresh blood stained his lips. Lachman had seen this look before. It would soon be over. He gripped his friend's hand in his own, whispering empty platitudes to him. Diallo locked eyes with his commander, nodding solemnly. A shuddering sigh trembled through his body, and his face went slack. Lachman let out a strangled sob as his oldest friend passed from this existence to the next. He felt the warmth of Weber's hand on his shoulder, a young man's attempt at comfort.
"I'm sorry, boss,"
he said in a cracked voice. Lachman rose slowly, wiping the tears from his face.
"Come on,"
he said.
"We have to keep moving."
The clearing opened up before them quite suddenly. Weber pulled up short as the trees parted, exposing a pool of moonlight crisscrossed with a spider's web of shadows. Above them, dark clouds scudded across the night sky, casting shifting pools of black on the ground beneath. At the center of the clearing, in a roiling pool of moonlight, sat a stained oak chest.
"Is that what I think it is?"
asked Weber, horror rising in his voice.
"Yes,"
said Lachman.
"I think so. But how? I don't understand."
Lachman looked around carefully. He eased the pistol from the holster at his hip.
"I don't think the Notwoods are quite done with us yet,"
he said.
"What? What are you talking about? The Notwoods have done this. What do you mean?" "Come on. We're not playing this game."
Lachman turned away from the clearing and plunged back into the trees. They pushed on for several minutes before stepping into a second clearing, the chest plainly visible at the clearing center. Weber snorted out a panicked laugh.
"What the hell?"
he said, his voice tinged with growing dismay. Lachman stood deathly still. He scanned the expanse with a veteran's eye. For a simple creature of flesh, of blood, there were precious few places to hide. But the creature that stalked them was anything but flesh and blood. Shadows uncounted webbed the ground, covering it like fractures in a broken window. Without warning, Weber hopped out from the moonlit spot they stood in, stepped precariously into a second pool of light.
"What the hell are you doing?"
hissed Lachman.
"What choice do we have?"
asked Weber as he leapt across a maze of shadows.
"It's just going to keep following us. We can't run, we can't hide. I may as well die a rich man."
Weber's voice was manic with fear and edged with madness.
"We don't want the bloody chest, you dolt!"
Weber tottered from one patch of pale light to the next as Lachman called out to him. With each step and hop, he drew closer to the chest. Often he would have to abort a jump or step, as a passing cloud stole the light from his intended destination. All the while, Lachman berated him for a fool. After several heart-pounding minutes, he drew within arm's length of the prize he sought.
"I've made it," he called out. "Brilliant," replied Lachman. "Now what do you intend to do?" "I think I have a plan."
Weber crouched, shifting his weight lower to the ground. He reached out for the clasps on the chest's lid. His fumbling fingers scraped against the stained brass fittings, scrabbling to flip them open. Across the clearing, Lachman watched anxiously. The wind had picked up, and the once crawling clouds had become erratic. Weber flipped the first catch open. It snapped up with a satisfying clunk.
"One down," he shouted.
Lachman muttered under his breath, cursing the boy for a madman. Weber leaned forward, extending his reach out towards the second clasp. His weight shifted onto the balls of his feet, and he teetered forwards. The tips of his fingers caught under the heavy brass clip, and he strained to flip it open. It flipped up, and the sudden motion caused Weber to stagger forwards a step. He collapsed onto his hands and knees, falling into the shadow of the chest. Lachman's breath caught in his throat. For what seemed like the longest time, both men simply froze. Nothing happened. Weber let out another terrified laugh and stood up, reaching to open the chest lid. Black tendrils, spider-limbed and deadly, snapped out from beneath his feet, wrapping him and the chest in a deadly embrace. Lachman screamed and raced forwards, the pistols in his hands barking. The bandersnatch held Weber firm as Lachman ran towards them. Then it was gone. In a single, fluid motion, it yanked the younger man and the chest into an abyss of shadow. The clouds parted above Lachman. Moonlight flooded the clearing, chasing the umbral maze away. It was too much for Lachman. The disastrous campaign, the loss of his company, his friends. He was too old for this. Had seen too much death, felt too much pain. He knelt in the center of the clearing and waited for the bandersnatch to return and take him. There were no tears, just the simple sigh of an old man who knew the end was near and was too tired for the fight. The night was long and cold. Lachman waited for the death blow, but it never came. Morning found Lachman alive. He awoke curled into a ball on the damp earth, right where the bandersnatch had killed Weber. Uncomprehending and alone, he staggered from the clearing. A path, broad and smooth, opened before him, and by noon, he was wandering along the road to Malifaux, the Notwoods and their secrets behind him. Three days later, Kai Lachman stood before four gravestones in a dismal cemetery in Malifaux. He had spent the last of his coin commissioning four headstones and purchasing a small plot. A dismal rain began to fall as he reached inside his heavy jacket and withdrew the battered and dog-eared notebook and pencil. The pages of the book flipped open almost of their own accord. Such was the frequency that Lachman looked at this page. Taking his pencil, he slowly and deliberately drew four lines. There was only one name left. For the life of him, Lachman could not understand why the bandersnatch had not taken him. Perhaps it had gotten what it wanted, or perhaps it simply would not waste its time on an old, broken man. He sighed and shook his head, resigning himself to a mystery he would likely never solve. As he left the cemetery, inky tendrils danced around the edges of Lachman's shadow.
That's it for another episode of The Weird Chronicles. Join us next time for more tales of action and adventure.